When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we're giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey guys, welcome to the 97th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, storytelling, and directing. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today we have Pat Bishop on. Pat directed every single episode of the new Comedy Central series, Corporate, which is awesome and incredible, and I recommend everyone check out. But even if you haven't seen the show yet, he's got a ton of really interesting insight on directing the first season of his television show. He started out just kind of like everybody else, making internet videos. He had a great sketch team, and now he is helming and created a TV show with a really specific visual style and flair and a great comedic point of view. So it's a really interesting conversation about how to implement that point of view into a corporate structure.
Yeah, talking to Pat was awesome. He's, like Matt said, you know, has a background in web video. He used to do a bunch of stuff for Funny or Die. And, you know, I think it's a story we've heard many times before. A comedian slash editor ends up getting a TV show. It was really fun talking to him because he is a guy that has always kind of done everything himself, and this is the first time that he had like a giant crew, and it's really fun just hearing, you know, I think something a lot of our listeners have experienced or will experience is just making that transition from being responsible for everything to having this giant team and how to manage that stuff. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this.
Yeah, I certainly did. I love those aha moments of like, oh yeah, I don't have to wake up at 5 a.m. anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a
really great thing. But before we talk to Pat, we wanted to let you guys know that we got a sponsor for our show. It's a company called Film Casualty. We liked them as a sponsor because they have a service that would cater to our listeners. They provide insurance for filmmakers. And I think Matt and my first instinct was like, insurance is pretty boring. What is interesting about it? And so we challenged the CEO of Film Casualty, Cameron Woodward, to talk to us about why filmmakers should care about insurance. And for the next few episodes, we're going to play different segments from our interviews with him. So hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, we figured if we're going to do a sponsorship, it's got to be something that's going to bring additional value to our listeners, like educational value to our listeners, regardless of whether or not they end up actually using the service. So we'd love to hear what you think about them. We're pretty proud of them. I think they're like cool pieces of content that we would air otherwise anyway. You know, I've certainly, all of the questions we asked came from the heart because I don't know anything about insurance and I know a little bit more now.
Yeah, I know a ton more now. So here's our first sponsorship segment from Film Casualty.
We sat down with our friend Cameron from Film Casualty to talk a little bit more about the ins and outs of insurance and how the fine folks at Film Casualty could help us out.
Is there any kind of insurance, like let's say I'm directing a commercial for someone and I'm taking some big risks creatively and then they end up hating the commercial and not wanting to air it? It's happened to me many times.
That's actually a really, really good question. So oftentimes in a general liability policy, there is coverage to protect against a lawsuit arising in the effect that a client says that the product or service that you provided was faulty. And so in many cases, this is one of the best reasons to even hold insurance, is to protect yourself against third parties coming after you for who knows why. Oftentimes, simply holding an insurance policy can protect you from some really scary legal fees that might be around the corner.
For more information about how to protect your film business, gear, project, and crew, go to filmcasualty.com/justshootit. That's filmcasualty.com/justshootit. Insurance for every kind of filmmaker.
Great. So without further ado, now we are going to jump into our interview with Pat Bishop.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, Matt told me about you, and then he said, dude, I just watched Corporate. It's like really, really good. You got to watch it.
Yeah. So great. Everybody go watch it. Pat, you were the director on the entire season.
Yes.
Did you block shoot? Like, tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah. So we shot the pilot first before they picked up the rest of the series. And then, yeah, we shot 9 back to back, basically. And yeah, for the sake of efficiency, we really went nuts with it. There was, I think, one day we shot scenes from 8 different episodes.
Oh, boy. That's wild, man.
Do you try to just pick something up from the 9th episode just so you can feel
just
like
to
complete?
Yeah. No, I don't think we even noticed until it was like, this seems like a lot of episodes that we're covering today.
Was it just reaction shots from like one character?
There were like lots of cold opens or like montages where we needed like a shot in like 20 different locations. So throughout the like shooting schedule, we're shooting a shot for that montage again today for the 10th time.
Got it. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, to just dive deep right away, how do you, like, I'm working on this show right now, and part of the thing we're trying to balance is like number of locations, right? The production company is like, get the locations down, but you want to give like scope to your show, right? You don't want the whole thing to take place in one location. So how do you kind of balance that? Is there like some sort of formula or structure where you're like, I want to see like at least 5 locations per episode, or how do you think about it that way?
Especially just to kind of set the table for the listeners a little bit, Corporate, most of it is in a corporate office, right? 90% of the show, right? So it's like, it's cubicles and boardrooms and stuff like that.
Yeah, the later episodes we go to the office more, and that was the thing we wanted to have a balance of, because it's a workplace sort of comedy, but it's also about a corporation that makes everything. So you need to see what it's like for the employees who work there, but you also need to see how the kind of small things they're doing are affecting the larger world.
Right.
So we needed that balance, and I think it did make it possible for us to shoot very efficiently by shooting, and we shot in the LA Times building downtown, which is they have entire floors that are empty now because of the fall of journalism.
Beautiful high rise.
So we could, and it really had a lot to offer of kind of just like these great sort of like standing sets, essentially. So we could get a lot of different looks out of that building and still be moving efficiently. But yeah, we had to at a certain point like get outside and go to a park and shoot some stuff so the audience wouldn't feel totally oppressed by that. I think it's in our show too, like in the writing, we try to make every episode different and we try to like go somewhere in the show. So it's not just like a sitcom where you have the, you know, Jerry's apartment and the like diner. You want to go somewhere visually in the show. And that does, it takes extra time. And I think especially like even setups within like a single location was even more of the thing of getting all the shots I wanted. I had to cut shots all the time.
Sure.
You know, a thing that I realize in hearing that it's in a basically a practical location makes sense. There's a lot of ceiling in your show in a way that made it feel real and oppressive and cool looking, you know? You know, oftentimes you don't get to see a ceiling because there isn't one. you know what I mean? So
yeah, that's like Mad Men. Everyone's like, would always talk about the ceiling shots because it's like ever present, you know, in every scene.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, we try to take advantage of what we had and kind of took the thing of like, just give us a location that's real and we'll figure out ways to shoot and make it interesting versus constructing something that you have to give set specifications for. Just kind of, I feel like I'd always take the choice of like, give me a big field to kind of play with.
Yeah. I think also maybe coming from the internet and like from kind of a more scrappy indie DIY place, I think, I don't want to speak for everybody else, but I feel very comfortable going into a location and figuring out what makes that location special, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that
when we graduate up to TV, sometimes you get overwhelmed with choices when it's like, okay, well, I'm building a set, so what color do I want this wall to be? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've said for years I shot just like web videos and things with, I was in a sketch group called Women with Jake Weissman from Corporate, as well as Dave Ross and Alan Strickland Williams. And we shot the vast majority of our sketches in one of our apartments and right, had to like make it interesting. But I think like we could still find a way to do that. And yeah, you have to be more resourceful.
Right.
Yeah. Resourceful.
Do you think there's any directors in the world that prefers to shoot on a set than on a on location?
Yeah, because you can control everything. You can take the walls away. And there was, the main kind of actual location we had was Matt and Jake's office, which was, we got to pick a small room. So it feels like these guys are trapped in this small office together. And then it was like a nightmare to shoot in there because we had two cameras in there.
Right.
And had to, anytime we wanted to get a shot from the back of the room, we had to take all the furniture out and move it and get the cameras back there. So it would have been nice to have removable walls.
Yeah. That is a location specifically that would have been pretty easy to build.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like season two, maybe.
Yeah. Well, they had to shoot some promos and it's a totally different crew and they shot it later and they just rebuilt that set. Really? Like, well, this is kind of nice, actually.
Well, you know, in that movie Room, Brie Larson movie, that they built that room on a stage and they built it a lot bigger than it was described in the book. Because they exactly what you're saying. We want to be able to move around and shoot, and they felt like it just felt too big, and so they like made it way smaller. And the walls were still removable, but sometimes like forcing yourself into that cramped space. Like I've shot like a dorm room before, and the production designer built it really big, like it was the size of four dorm rooms.
Yeah.
And when you're shooting it, it feels like the actors are like far away from each other, you know, and they're each sitting on their bed. So there's something about like really shooting in a small space that's helpful.
I feel like I'm still learning how much you can like fake things, or you can build a set and make something look like that's not actually what it is. I'm so used to starting of like, well, just make it look like what we want it to look. It's like, no, you need to build a whole thing and then we can control it and make it look like an awesome version of two people sitting at a table talking to each other.
Right. I guess when you're building sets, now that I think about it, it is kind of hard, like Matt saying, like you talk to your production designer and you can do anything you want. So you're like, well, we need these four walls and this door and like we'll put a bed here. But like if instead of doing that, like thinking what you need, but actually going out to like real locations and saying like, oh, there's a weird built-in shelf here. This window is awkward.
That inspires a weird joke and all of a sudden it becomes a runner. And like,
yeah. So I guess before
your show is about the weird shelf.
Yeah. Before talking to the production designer, you should go see like how weird places look.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we'll just be building boxes and shooting boxed stuff. It'll look like Minecraft.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, this was my first TV show. So there are all these kind of like parts of the process that I'd never gotten to do the right way before, like location scouting and casting and all these different things that I have tried to learn about and be a student of and how to take advantage of it. And now I feel like I know more how to like search for locations, or I'm more hungry to like, let's look at 100 places and find the coolest location. Whereas before I'm used to like, just, well, where can, what? Are we allowed to shoot?
Yeah.
Only one option. Okay, cool. Well, let's do it in my apartment then.
What, besides locations, were there other things in particular that you kind of, found interesting or like, you know,
working with a bigger crew, than I ever had before, I realized just how much the kind of chain reaction that would occur with any decision I would make or any change I would make kind of last minute, and how, because I would see kind of the camera crew and the actors and kind of the immediate stuff, but there's this whole infrastructure surrounding it. There's like the makeup team is off on their own, and like production design has people like in the office working on stuff for next week, but also people like costumes are out shopping. There's all this stuff kind of going on, especially when you're shooting a TV show, like multiple weeks of production back to back. It needs to be this sort of machine that has these different ongoing processes.
Right. And how many weeks did you shoot the 9 episodes in?
8 weeks. So we had like four days per episode.
And there are 22 minutes?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which was not enough time.
Yeah, that's pretty fast.
But I hear is standard.
Yeah.
Well, 4 days,
Yeah, I'm trying to think now.
I mean, for a sitcom, you could, they shoot them in a week, right?
But, yeah, or so that's so different. 6 days sometimes, I want to say. Like, so you kind of float a little bit. I don't know.
I'm sure, like, a Last Man on Earth probably gets, like, 8 to 10 days per episode.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
yeah.
you think?
But, I'm trying to think of how many days.
But I bet a Broad City yeah, would but, be, like, 4 days.
Yeah, yeah, they're probably the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say it's so funny that you mentioned like the chain reaction part, because I feel like that's a common thing we hear on the show of like when it's you and your friends in an apartment, you decide to flip the room again real quick and it's the equivalent of you moving a camera. It's not a big deal, right? Yeah. Like you can kind of like be a little bit more of an artiste about it. But then if that means that 30 people have to move all of their gear back and forth, you know, that's a tiny microcosm of what you're talking about. But like,
yeah. And I feel like too, I'm trying to learn to resist the urge of like, well, don't make it so complicated. Just do it the like fast and like yeah. half-assed way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've got, and to, we hired like a cinematographer who is this like French guy in his like 50s, who's done like a lot of commercials and features and that sort of thing. So he had this kind of like very kind of high standards for everything. And that's what we wanted too. And wanted him to kind of augment our like just comedy video background by making everything look good. But so he had these kind of rules of like what we had, if we were going to do something, it had to look good. So I couldn't like just cheat or like cut corners the way I'm like used to.
Dude, come on, just get that shot real quick, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Pan over and just, can you get her? And he'll be like, she's
over.
Not lit.
Just zoom in and pan over.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
That's so funny.
So you shot two cameras?
Yeah.
Two Alexas?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, I was going to say, I remember on a show I just did, the AD said something that I'll always remember. He said, you have to get used to asking people to do things they don't want to do. Right. And there's like the little bit of like a nice guy and a, like a roll with the punches sort of mentality that I think we probably have of like, you know, like, well, it's another way of cutting a corner. Right. Like you know, in the back of your head, oh, maybe it would be better if we did it this way, but we're kind of behind and, you know, we would cause all these problems. So I'm not going to ask for that thing. And like learning when you mean it, when you do want to actually ask for the thing or not. I think is like that a part of the growing pain of leveling up, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel too like directing, I was constantly just solving problems, or like people would present, here's an obstacle to this. And sometimes there wouldn't be a solution, or the solution is, well, just do it anyway. Like, we gotta go. And I think because I'm sort of like, they're all day stressed out, you know,
right.
Like, so I know I'm in this kind of hurried state all day, but somebody like an actor comes on for their scene or something. And like, this is all they have to do for the day. And sometimes you have to, there's a conflict in conveying to somebody like, no, we're behind.
Yeah.
We got to get this, your thing. That's
just be funny. Go.
Yeah. So important to you. It's just one of 100 things I got to do today.
Right.
Well, that's the thing I've been working on lately, which is telling actors that are there for like one line or for one quick thing to say like, hey, just so you know, you're like, you're super important to us. Your work is really important. We're like running behind, so we might only do one or two takes. If you need another one, let me know. But if I'm moving on, it means that I loved what you did.
Yeah.
And the client loved what you did, and that's it. So don't be offended.
Because I try to be sympathetic to those people too, because they're sitting around all day, and then it's like there's like one moment where it's like everyone's looking at them, there's all these lights shining, and it's like, okay, go.
Yeah,
nail
yeah.
it. And it's high pressure just
yeah.
after sitting around and waiting for so long.
Especially if you're not a series regular, like everyone else knows each other. And like all of a sudden you've got the one line, this is probably like a relatively big break, you know, like this is an opportunity. And then the stars of the shows are, you know, having a good time and everybody knows each other. And then, everyone looks at you and you get three chances to do it. And that's that.
Yeah.
And you know, you got to call your mom afterwards and tell her how it went. And yeah, it's like...
Yeah, and I'm not, like, ever worried about... I never, like, judge anyone. It's just like, we'll just do it until we get it. So for me, it's like this kind of, like, you know, it's fine. If you screw up, it's fine. Let's roll again.
Do it
right away. So I try to put people at ease, but people...
Yeah, sure. They're like, oh,
I worked with this actor years ago that while we were working together and booked this TV show, and he was, like, a regular on it, and he told me, like, on the TV show, it was so different because... He said if like the dolly move, the focus and the timing was like perfect, then they would move on. And he's like, so I have to like on the very first take, I have to bring it. I have to do my best performance always, because I know if like technically everything is right, they don't want, they're not going to give let me play around with it.
Yeah, that was another tricky thing in the sort of aesthetic of our mm-hmm. show. We use kind of like shallow depth of field.
Sure.
And we have kind of specific camera moves, dollies mostly, versus just a looser handheld sort of thing. So it is very precise. And I have to like, you have to nail everything down in blocking. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of limit the actor's abilities to improvise. And our main cast understood that and just got used to it. But when guest stars would come in too, it'd sometimes be a little tricky,
that's
or they
really
start improvising or something. I'm like, that's really funny, but honestly, it's completely unusable.
I can't use it. Oh, yeah. That's so interesting.
If my camera operator doesn't know what you're going to do, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And sort of but that's the aesthetic we chose, and it pays off by looking cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
looks
you have
great.
To be more disciplined.
And looks special for sure. And I want to talk more about how you guys arrived on that. But it is really. My mind is a little blown because, like, of course you're hiring super funny people, like, out of the same kind of comedy community that you've been working in for a long time. And so it's very in vogue right now to be prepared to improvise a little bit and play and have fun. And there's two cameras rolling, right? So you kind of, an actor would immediately think part of their job is, like, hey, you know, add a little extra flavor.
And the less lines they have, the more they want to, like, impress you. Probably.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a balance because on the one hand, you don't want things to be too stiff. You want to have those kind of moments that feel off the cuff. Mm-hmm. And especially with the kind of like show that's very kind of specific in its visual style and the camera moves are choreographed. You want things that feel like the camera wasn't expecting it to happen, to get that spontaneity. But at the same time, like I think from a comedic perspective too, we're not people who like to improv a lot and let the silly actors be funny. There's like an overall vision that each actor is kind of fitting into.
I see.
So it was sometimes good to sort of like have to limit people, even just for, we had technical excuses to like give them from what we were doing. But also, sometimes I wondered, if I should like explain to actors who just came on for a day, it's like, so here's what we do here.
Yeah,
we take
yeah.
comedy very seriously and we don't screw around.
But there's also like, you know, So I haven't seen as much of your show as Matt has seen, but I've seen a little bit of it. And there does seem to be like a rhythm and like a specificity and like people aren't like mumbling around and stuff. Mm-hmm. So when you have that rhythm and someone's improvising and adding like three endings to the scene, you're like, well, I only need one ending and now I don't know where to cut because you just wouldn't stop talking at the end.
I also, I'm very involved in the editing as well and come from an editing background. So I also try to not bullshit people. It's like, honestly, I'm not going to use any of that and it's going to be my decision. So I try to be honest with people or like if they're going to improvise, set them up so that I will use it.
Sure, yeah.
But not just placate people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny. So let's rewind a little bit. So you are the writer, director, partial editor, creator, and producer of the show?
So I created the show with Matt Ingenbretson and Jake Weissman, who are the two stars of the show. And we together developed it. We wrote and ran a writer's room. And then I directed the season. And we were all involved. We're executive producers, so we're kind of the creative head in the editing and kind of just in general.
You're the boss of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you the showrunner?
We had Jake Fogelnest was our showrunner for season one and helped run the writer's room mostly. And we just wrote a season two that we're hoping to be allowed to shoot where Matt, Jake, and I ran the show.
Gotcha.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. You guys wrote the entire season without being greenlit for it?
Yep.
Oh, wow. How long did that take?
3 months. Yeah.
Unpaid?
No, we got paid. So they are at least they've...
Oh, they bought the script, but they haven't greenlit the season?
Yes.
Is that normal?
They delayed the release of the show, I think just for their own programming reasons, so that they needed, I think, to keep us, for contractual reasons, needed to like pull the trigger on at least some face of it.
Got it.
Earlier. And they also were just very supportive of us and liked the show, and it's a vote of confidence.
Wow, that's awesome. So,
it will be absolutely devastating if we don't get to shoot it.
So, when you're on set, do you like are the Comedy Central people there, and do you have to get them to approve like big changes you decide to make on the spot?
No, they would be there sometimes, but no, pretty much left us alone. And
so if the scene's not working, you can just rewrite it there. You can tell someone to do something different. Like, you kind of have all the power to do whatever you want.
Yeah, and it was good that Matt, Jake, and I are the main parts of it, and I'm the director, they're the two actors. So it was very easy to, like, change things and right. not have to go check with anyone. It's right. like we can
You're
feel
the
it out
deciders.
And make our own
yeah.
decisions
yeah.
too. So, yeah, it was good to have that sort of consolidation of the kind of creative decision-making. Yeah.
And so going back to the look and feel and style of the show, right? It's very controlled. It's very specific. It's not what you think a comedy looks like right now. Do you know, it's not bubblegum at all. Like you said, it's very shallow depth of field, controlled camera move. It's very cool. So how did you communicate that to the network? And was that part of the pitch? Like, when did that style kind of come to be?
It was in its sort of broad strokes, was right there from the beginning, and something that Matt, Jake, and I collectively sort of felt. We wanted it to look different from other comedy. We wanted it to feel darker, kind of like mm-hmm. a David Fincher.
Sure. Yeah. I was going to say it looks like a Fincher movie.
Yeah.
But and funnier.
And I think there's a, yeah, just sort of default in comedy to make it brighter and with brighter colors so that it feels fun and kind of happy. And that was just kind of specifically at odds with the point of our show, which is that it's a depressing work environment. So we tried to be extremely upfront with what we're going to doing, because it looks different from other comedies. And but I think the other thing is that we're all fans of movies and feel that comedy a lot of times doesn't try as hard as it could to use cinematic techniques or just look good and interesting. And so we tried to, in the writing phase, to infuse that into the script and, like, you know, because you can't just slap a visual style on top of a script that sure. wasn't thought of in that way. It needs to be integrated into that. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's really what we wanted to bring to a comedy, is a sort of more cinematic sensibility.
That's cool. I've thought about that a lot, because you kind of think when you mix comedy with, like, cinematic, like highly stylized cinematic aesthetics, it's usually a parody, right?
Yeah.
Like the Key and Peele stuff, which was like, oh, a lot of it looked amazing, but it was there like making fun of a genre or something.
Yeah, because you kind of, it's taking it seriously. Because I think there's some of that to a comedy too. If it's kind of handheld and just fun, it's like, oh, they just hung out with those people and made those jokes. But if it's like this, like lit in a very specific way and with a camera move, it's like they're very serious about this stupid thing that this guy's saying. Which I think sometimes can be the joke almost, if it's comedic lines. It's the joke is almost how hard we work to make it look good for that stupid joke.
Well, how do you think like Edgar Wright's style fits into this conversation?
Yeah, I think it's very similar in the way he kind of like accentuates things and sort of dips into genre parody a bit, kind of at ease in a fluid way. And that I think it's...
Because his stuff is like really bright and poppy, but it's also super specific and visual. You know,
yeah,
I guess it's like his own thing.
Yeah, what I admire about him is he really makes things pop through cinematic techniques that other people aren't doing. But what I think maybe I would have a criticism about, like Baby Driver, for instance, is that it's sort of a story about the criminal, like underworld, feels a little like weird when it's kind of has this brightness to it and this kind of like gloss to the whole thing.
Yeah. I would say the thing that I like also about corporate is that that darkness allows you to go a little surreal. And so you get a different bag of tricks that kind of makes sense as well. Like you can get like a little more subjective with like the point of view a little bit, you know, like there's some dream sequences and stuff that you guys do. The camera moves can feel overt, but like in a more, subjective sort of way. Like you're in the state of mind of like being overwhelmed by a corporate monotony.
Yeah. And I think part of that is like, we just wanted to be able to make up our own rules and do whatever we wanted and be the sort of like God of our universe in a way that I think, I like to embrace, because some things in a more realistic view is like, this is sort of just what happened. It's like, no, it's not. It's all fake. You're controlling it all like a puppeteer. So I like sort of just not being limited by that and feeling right. free to indulge or go into someone's head if it's, you know, motivated by story and just kind of have fun and show these different sides to it.
So specifically, how did you represent that to the network and to each other even? You know, like at what point did people really understand, oh, this is what the show looks like? Is it a lookbook or is it a rhythmatic or is it just conversations or...
I guess, well, or is it part of the pitch, right? Is that kind of what you're asking too?
I guess that, and then also like, what I'm really saying, I guess, is that, you know, when I'm pitching and talking to an executive or someone like that, I can tell them as many times as I want that it's going to be X, Y, and Z, but it isn't until they really see it that they get it, right? And your show is so specific looking that if they didn't know what they were buying... and it was a surprise, that could be a problem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think we just tried to communicate it. We had a lookbook, but we never showed it. It wasn't for Comedy Central. It was just sort of for our cinematographer.
Was he involved at all in creating that look? Or did you kind of give it to him and he just made it?
Well, he had the kind of like specifics of how to execute the vague idea that we had. And mm-hmm. I think the kind of lens choices and the kind of... Yeah, the technical side of it, he was able to fill in. I didn't know really how to like pull that off. Mm-hmm. And the lighting too, I really left up to him and is not a thing I'm as strong at. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it was sort of, I think the key decision was hiring a person who had a track record of doing stuff that looked interesting that wasn't typical comedy. Mm-hmm. Versus, because we also did interview... cinematographers who had mostly done comedy or TV comedies. And it was like, well, should we tell them to do something different? Because in the interview, they all said, yeah, I can do something different. Yeah. It's like, and maybe...
Please, let me. I want to.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they could have, but we did not give them the chance. I was like, no, I don't believe you. But I think, yeah, making the kind of riskier choice of pick somebody who has a different background mm-hmm. and sort of trust them to bring their own kind of instincts to kind of mix in with our instincts, which come from a different place.
Right. Well, what did you tell your DP? Did you say, like, we want it to look like a Fincher movie? Was that, like, in your references?
Well, yeah, when we interviewed the cinematographer, he created a lookbook, brought it to us, and there is an image in it that was also in our lookbook, coincidentally, from cool. Fight Club. And I was like, oh, okay, this guy is kind of, that's how he sees it. And
what image?
It was just a picture of Edward Norton when his like boss is talking to him in the office and he has a cigarette hanging out of his mouth and is just kind of turned, making like a fuck you face to his boss.
Right. And you like that because of how it looked, but also tonally, that's like what the show is about.
Yeah, it was contrasty and his face kind of looked bad. It was like, perfect.
He's been fighting people at that point.
But you're like, it's like hating your boss also.
Yeah.
So when you're pitching this show, like how aware... Or how worried are you about like The Office or Workaholics or these other shows that are about people working at a corporation? Like,
well, I think that's part of the reason too. We felt like we needed a kind of strong, different angle on the workplace comedy. And I think people have responded to our show is that it's pretty like extreme and like it's sure. darkness and its tone. But that it was, I think, actually an asset as we were pitching it is that we have this different point of view. And I think also a key part was the stuff that Matt, Jake, and I had made before and the women videos, which have a very specific kind of point of view and a darker tone and sense of humor. So I felt like they were able to see how we would make something different mm-hmm. than those people, given everything we'd done before.
So we're going way out of order here, but can you just walk us through how you got the opportunity to pitch and then kind of what like your elevator pitches for the show?
Sure.
Like what convinced Comedy Central to get the pilot made?
Yeah. Well, we sometimes say it's like Office Space meets American Psycho.
Cool. Great. Cool. Well,
yeah. Yeah.
Or if like David Fincher directed The Office.
Right.
So yeah, I think we kind of led with the like darkness of it. And,
did you get in there because they were familiar with the woman stuff?
I'd done like a lot of stand-up when I first moved out to LA, and that's where I met Matt and Jake and the guys that I formed Women with. And so we'd made a lot of stuff, and on the side to those guys who are all doing stand-up. I stopped at a certain point doing stand-up to focus on directing. But they were still kind of out there and on Comedy Central's radar. So, yeah, I kind of found a community of people that got our foot in the door there. And, yeah, Matt had a general meeting with Comedy Central where he loosely talked about the idea and they asked us to come in for a pitch. And it was, so it was the first place we pitched it. And had, yeah, just a, like a two-page treatment about
it. Did you go in with an agent or anything?
No.
Just the three of you guys?
Yeah.
And you had two
pages. That's kind of the magic of Comedy Central. It's like there's a few places where you can still kind of do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And because they've got a talent department basically like keeping track of who's the up and coming stand up right now. Like they're I had heard Jake's name in particular back when I was at Comedy Central. That's probably like 5 years ago now. Just like, oh, people are tracking people who are doing comedy, right. You know what
they're
I mean?
Like, yeah, it's just like the influencers, of, how people track YouTube influencers, exactly. the digital world. Like,
yeah, you're just like it's important to be aware of whose voices are emerging, basically. Yeah,
and that was, I feel like our sketch group, Women, we never like went viral or nothing ever got that many views, but we became one of those people in LA or one of those groups in LA that was cool to know about. If
sure.
If you worked in an agency or something, we became kind of like a...
I call that Hollywood viral.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about views, but it's like, oh, you know, you get passed around a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think we did stuff that was kind of different than what other people were doing. So we stood out. We were a cool thing to like for a second. Mm-hmm. And that was really helped us.
And were you doing live stuff or like YouTube videos?
Pretty much exclusively video. Yeah.
For YouTube, or were you doing Funny or Die? Was that with Women, or was that a separate?
I worked at Funny or Die separately as a writer, director, editor. That was like the first job I had coming out to LA. I kind of snuck in the door as a. I was like, I'll just back up the hard drives.
Sure. On the original post-PA. Side, or on the
on the original side for their website. And then, so that I was kind of doing two careers parallel to each other. Mm-hmm. One where I was kind of working at Funny or Die, making web videos. And then that eventually led into some editing work for the Birthday Boys on IFC and some other stuff as well. But on the weekends and nights, I would go out and do stand up and shoot videos with Women, which was sort of like at Funny or Die, the videos I made had to kind of like chase views or like. Mm-hmm. Be topical and
right.
Try to go viral. And that's
Sofia Vergara wants to do a funny video about the president.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I guess that's the current version of that. But yeah.
Make a sketch that people think is a sex tape when they click on it, and then it's actually a comedy sketch. That was best trick Funny or Die came up with. it really did work.
That's so depressing. That's so
poor. But yeah, the women... videos became the thing that we could just do whatever the fuck we wanted. Mm-hmm. And like, I wouldn't have to appeal to an internet audience specifically or kind of pander for views. Mm-hmm. It was just like, do whatever we want. And that's the thing that ended up leading to things more directly is the stuff I did for fun on the side.
Yeah. But you were also like honing your skills at Funny or Die, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a good combo.
And so you get this general meeting or Jake has a general meeting. He soft pitches them corporate. He says it's a show about people that work for a corporation.
Yeah, I think, well, the thing that a lot of people have related to the show is like Comedy Central executives work for Viacom. They worked at a giant corporation. So the show is like relatable to them. And it was sort of like, we want to like show that it sucks to work in an office and not try to make it fun because it's a comedy TV show that people... are supposed to want to watch.
Yeah, that's funny because I feel like the thing you would hear when I worked at Comedy Central is just like, oh, it must be so much fun and everyone must be so funny.
Just laughing all the time.
Yeah.
No, it's like everything else.
Yeah, it does. It's like I'm still in a cube. It still smells like microwave pizza back there, you know, like.
I liked working in an office when I did it. Sorry, guys.
But you worked at like a young internet startup office.
Yeah. I guess we didn't really have cubicles.
Like, yeah.
I had desks.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I had fun working at Funny or Die. I actually didn't have a bad corporate job that makes me relate to the show.
Did the other guys?
Matt did, especially. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they both had to work kind of day jobs.
But we've all gotten like client notes, which are kind of the same as boss notes.
Yeah.
Right? In a way.
They're less jargony, though. There is like I'll still say like, I wouldn't say like put a pin in it, but like my email writing is I catch myself realizing like, oh, there is some jargon that I can't get out of my system.
That's funny. Let's take this offline, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's a jargon. I guess even what you just said about like this, let's pretend, like fool people into thinking this is a sex tape, but it's really a comedy tape, is like, it's fun to see it work, but it's like also frustrating that you are misleading people in order to watch your stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, as opposed to what you really want to do, which is you want to make people watch your stuff because it's good.
Yeah, just the conflict of like, I need to make some money. It's like,
right.
That's the goal of a job versus right. like, I want to do whatever I want.
Right.
For my own reasons.
Oh, yeah. What's that documentary? Is it called The Corporation? You guys see that? Hmm. From years ago? It's kind of about how a corporation, and the American corporation has one goal and only one goal, and that's like make money for the shareholders.
Yeah.
At all expenses. Like everything else is secondary.
Yeah.
And it's not like an evil conspiracy. That's just like
that's
the fact.
Literally the
what they're required to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what we try to tap into in corporate, to the idea that like there's not a like villain who's causing all this. It's a system that everyone's trapped in. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't even have a better idea for a better system. So
right. I guess communism or
can try that.
Fascism.
So
maybe there's a new thing.
Yeah. Let's figure it out, guys.
Tom, we've got
it right now.
So you pitch in the room, right? They're into it, and at this point, you've cut a handful of things, right? Like you cut all of the birthday boys and all of that, but you hadn't directed a television show yet, right? Go ahead. Yeah.
No, not really. I'd done a lot of, Funny or Die sketches, and some of them were kind of higher profile or mm-hmm. like, I was able to cut a reel with a bunch of like kind of celebrities or half celebrities in it.
Sure.
There you go. A director's reel? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So was there ever a conversation of like, oh, is Pat the guy who's going to do all of this? Or did anyone ever doubt you or anything?
I'm sure there were those conversations. Mm-hmm. I was not involved in them.
Lucky you.
That's and great. You, Matt and Jake were like, 100% on your side. Like, did you ever have that conversation with them? Sorry for putting you on the spot, but Matt and I have had this conversation with writers and co-writers millions of times, which is saying like, look, if they want to buy the show and you'll still get paid, but you won't get to direct.
And you're still writing.
You'll get a producer credit on it.
But they want to bring in a hot shot.
Yeah, the show might only
but Mick
get
G's
going to
come in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, did that conversation never happen?
It didn't come to that, no. And I think it's because of all the stuff that we've done before. Mm-hmm. And that just having sort of a proof of concept. And I think the idea that Matt and Jake are the actors and I'm their friend who directs, the sort of like, well, that's a package mm-hmm. that then we can control. So that was just for the pilot too. And then they really loved the pilot. So after that, the kind of battle was won.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you're there and you see, and it's the pilot that aired, right? It's the one that's on TV now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like then it's undeniable for sure.
And is the pilot like way lower budget than the rest of the series? Or like how does that work? Do they give you like a certain amount of money or do they say, okay, go write a script. And then if we like the script, we'll let you shoot the pilot.
First we wrote like an outline and script, and then they liked that, and they have a lot of scripts that they never shoot. That's the main thing that happens.
Sure. So it was like super traditional pilot season type of workflow that you guys did.
Yeah, pretty much. And I kind of liked it too. It was good to kind of like develop the show and then have a chance to like shoot it by just for one episode and try stuff out and like mm-hmm. kind of gather a crew and then also be able to go, because I'm someone who's always like written, directed, and edited something, or like the whole process of that, and learned about everything I've made kind of just at the last moment when it's done. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's what I should have done. So it's nice to be able to go through the whole production and post-production of a show
right.
for one episode before you sit down to write the rest of the episode and figure out what you're going to shoot.
You have a prototype now.
Yeah. Right?
So what did you revise? What did you change? What did you learn from episode one for the rest of the season?
I think we, like, pilots are tough because you have to cram so much into it. Every line has to be doing five things mm-hmm. for you. So I think we tried to like just not be so on the nose with kind of the jokes we're making about the corporate world or that sort of thing, but to get into character more and expand out in that way. And I think we sort of tried to think about like, let's limit locations or those sort of production minded thing. But I don't know. I think we kind of just made it as hard as for ourselves as the pilot was in the end.
Yeah. Cool. Well, great. It was worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw the one of the scenes I saw on my hotel TV was where the guy from The Leftovers,
Lance Riddick.
Yeah. Him. He is like going over fonts with, I think, Adam Lystick or
someone. Adam.
Mm-hmm. And it just like cracked. I've told like 10 people about that, even though it's like, I mean, I feel like I've seen font jokes before, but I don't know. It's just like so good. And like, it so just kept going and going. And it's like, I was in Houston, which they, for some reason, all the sign makers in Houston use horrible fonts. So I had fonts on the mind. So
and we figured out with Lance Reddick, the funniest thing is just to like, cause he has such like, gravitas and authority and everything to say, just make him say silly stuff or like a problem, a small problem he can't fix.
Sure.
That frustrates him. And
that's funny.
Like, papyrus. Try Helvetica. Yeah.
That's really funny.
So how stressful is the casting when you're doing the pilot? Because it's going to make or break the show, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of things to creating the show. I didn't realize how huge of a decision it was at the time, because I'm used to making sketches where it's 3 minutes and then it's done forever. Yeah.
You're like, this guy can't do it, so we'll use this guy.
Yeah. All the characters die at the end of every sketch. it is huge. And a new process for me too. And it was also the most like draining
casting
thing. Or no, just casting and like seeing 20 people read the same scene and having to wrap your head around
emotionally, it's
this
really
person
hard.
Yeah. In trying to imagine them in the series in every scene just would like fucked with my head.
Yeah.
And our casting director, I was, do you want to do like 2 hours a day? Or I was like, no, do like 3 or 4.
Sure.
But then after like 2 hours, I was like, oh my God, who is, I can't even remember any of these people.
Yeah. Yeah. I get genuinely super depressed after auditions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you do chemistry stuff too? Like see if people work together? Or?
Yeah, we did. We cast Adam Lustig kind of first because he, and it was, there were some really exciting moments in casting when people would bring stuff to life and see some really incredible actors. And so, we cast him, and then we wanted to, we tested Anne Dudek, who plays Kate, opposite him. And the like second she walked into the room and I saw them like stand next to each other, it was like, oh, that's it. Yeah. It's weird how kind of with your gut some of that stuff is and how immediately you can tell.
Did you know Lustig beforehand?
No.
Really?
Never met him before.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. That guy's so ubiquitous.
He's my favorite. I think he's
maybe
the funniest person I've met.
He's an incredible actor, too.
He's so good.
He's really...
I'd say like 10 separate times I've asked for random people for a recommendation for a funny actor.
Yeah.
And like they've like totally different people have sent me like his info.
Yeah. And like, he's the most enthusiastic, best attitude person.
Yeah. So good.
He loved it.
I feel like also... just kind of as a lesson to being an actor, like being enthusiastic, being smart, being engaged, and basically being well-liked is kind of the secret to his success.
Yeah.
You know, like I think you don't hear a bad word about him, right?
Very positive, down for whatever, but also like knows his lines perfectly.
Yeah.
He's extremely professional.
Also seems like he gets it, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's funny.
Yeah. And he'd been a fan of women and like our stuff for a long time. So he was... effusive when we first met with him and so excited to be part of the show.
That's funny. I just kind of assumed that he was your buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well,
he is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole cast. Well, Riddick, what's his name? Sorry.
Lance Reddick.
Lance Reddick. I don't know him from like the comedy world, but like a lot of the other people on your show, I was like, oh, I recognize like almost all these people.
Yeah. It's a weird mix of stand-up comedians who haven't done much acting before. And a lot of people.
Yeah, Aparna Nanjiala isn't in a ton of...
Wasn't she in Crashing?
Oh, yeah, she's in Crashing.
Just
that's
now,
right.
She's really starting to be in everything.
Yeah.
But
besides
Twitter. Yeah.
Twitter she's had for a while.
And we knew all these people from the LA comedy scene, too, who were stand-ups who we featured as guest stars in the show, who haven't been on TV before. And it's cool, too. In our show, we didn't want to like cast anyone too famous or recognizable because we really wanted you to like feel like you're part of this world. And not be taken out of it by celebrity cameos or any of that stuff.
Right.
And so, we had all these like talented people that we'd done stand up with for years that we knew could be hilarious and tried to feature them. So it's a combination of those people and people like Lance Reddick, who is like a real actor who I have to like,
right?
I have to do a really good job directing.
Sure, sure.
Do you That's get really self-conscious funny. Sometimes? Like you're like,
I learned on Funny or Die shoots where I was thrown with a legitimately famous celebrity sometimes, and we only had one day to shoot like way too much to just kind of stand up and be like, all right, P. Diddy, you gotta, I need you to stand over there and I need to say sure. this. Okay, do it again, P. Diddy. Yeah. And to sort of just be, it's like, we just got to do this and have that attitude of not, there's no time
that.
To be self-conscious.
Yeah.
I feel like.
That's I do smart. Think, like when I did that thing with Will Arnett and Jimmy Kimmel, like they definitely listened to me and I, you know, they're like, well, just tell us what you want us to do. But they also like, we're so into talking to each other that like, I mean, if I saw them again, like the next day, I don't know that they would recognize me, you know,
yeah.
like they, and I don't know about like the P. Diddy shoot, but when you only have these people for like an hour, it's exactly. like they don't get to know you or anything.
Yeah, it is. And I try to just find, it's like, hey, today we got to do this, 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 and this,
right.
and be the person to just kind of lead them through it too. Cause yeah, I mean, that's, I feel like as a director, too, it's like, hey, everybody, it's like, I know what to do, and then we all get to go home. So mm-hmm. listen to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. and people right. will kind of sign up for that.
That is great advice. and also, like, that also means I know when I can be on my phone and when I can't be. Yeah. You know, like, right. if you're P. Diddy, you've got other things to worry about, yeah. right? So, like, this guy's got me. I'm going to do my thing. But I also can, like, you know, do the other 16 things that I need to be doing at that moment as well.
Right. By the way, I think he has a new name. I think, isn't his name like Love or something?
Mm, yeah.
Anyway.
Sorry, apologies to P. Diddy.
And to always be, PD. I know him as P. Diddy.
Yeah, sure.
So,
that's,
so speaking of advice, we like to ask our guests when we have time, and I'm going to try to sneak this in because we're running short. Like if you were, if somebody that's a new filmmaker that's just moving to LA or just graduating film school, like is looking at your career and wants to also have a TV show, on, you know, like you do, what advice would you give them?
I think what really worked for me was finding communities of people and trying to explore, that like I did took UCB classes when I came in here. I made stuff for Channel 101. I did stand up and I kind of found the people that I wanted to collaborate with and who I could share a voice with and whose skills, could supplement mine mm-hmm. and that we could kind of all benefit from something. So yeah, I'd say try to find people that you want to work with and that you can offer something to. And I think, yeah, just make your own stuff. Try to learn as many different skills as you can. Because I got into everything because I liked comedy writing. Mm-hmm. And then I found out how complicated making TV and movies is. So I tried to learn everything I could, camera and sound and editing and all that stuff. And that really helped me find a job and be employable when I came out here. Because I came out and said, like, I want to be a writer, director, editor. And everyone was like, well, everyone wants to be a writer, director, but you want to be an editor? Okay, here, sure. edit.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And that it also has now really helped me be able to control the quality of what I'm making now because I know about editing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, and especially too, when you're making your own stuff, if you need people to work for free, it's hard to convince people. So if you can like edit everything yourself.
Sure. That's one less position to worry about.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah. So it
and puts, one less insanely important position.
Yeah. And that, yeah. And I also think people get drawn into pursuing entertainment because they like one aspect of it, but you're better at, you'll be a better actor if you know about wardrobe and lighting and you'll be better at whatever your job is if you know about what everybody else is doing and the importance of that and how that can shape and add to what you're interested in.
How important do you think it is to have a clear goal? Like, did you come to LA and say like, I want to have a comedy TV show?
I probably, if you'd asked me, I probably would have said like a show on Comedy Central was what I wanted. So it worked out well, but I did find myself like starting a career in editing for a while and that was, and I liked it too. And it, I would,
yeah, it's a good job.
Yeah. It could have worked out and, I'm happier that I'm doing what I'm doing now, but I think no, I think you should be flexible and I think you should not have too set of an idea mm-hmm. of what you want, because it will change, I think, naturally.
Am I allowed to ask how many years it took you from when you moved to LA to having the show?
I moved here in 2010. We pitched it in 2015.
And oh, that's great. That's good to know. Yeah.
And now it's on the air in 2018.
Yeah.
So.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Over 7 years.
I always try to like kind of communicate how long things are, how long it takes to incubate things and how, you know, even getting an offer, you know, like negotiating contracts, shooting a pilot, waiting to hear back about whether or not you get the green light, then writing everything, then shooting everything, then finishing it, and then getting on the schedule.
Yeah, it's a real nightmare.
But also that 5 years of getting to a place where you have your community and you have, and people will take a meeting with you because you have something to offer.
Yeah, that was really building momentum those first few years was big. Yeah.
I would say that's pretty fast, actually. You said, so 5 years basically before you had sold a television show? That's very fast.
To me, like, I feel like the usual thing is 5 years till you get that meeting and then like another 5 years till you sell that show.
Yeah.
But you got it on your first try, so that's awesome.
I got lucky.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing anything else other than season two?
Hopefully season two. No, this has pretty much absorbed my life right now. I've got some scripts and concepts that I'm like working on and will hope to make after this. But for the moment, focused on corporate.
Do you have like reps like that you got from this or that you had before this that are like, give us more pitches?
I got reps a few years ago, kind of through women was how I got into the radar of the agencies and stuff. And now I'm at WME, and I've told them like I need to make corporate and because I'm involved in every phase of it, and that's what I like doing too. That's what I most prefer to do, is like be the person who is there when we came up with the joke and is there and like the sound mixed when we're adjusting the level of the line delivery. So I like being very hands-on, and I'll always, I think, choose that, like being involved in something start to finish instead of like having my hands in five different things at once. I like to be able to totally focus on something.
Yeah.
Right. I had that being a control freak.
Yeah. Well, I was having coffee with, Charles Hood, previous guest of Night Owls, and he made the point like you kind of only get to make 12 or 15 things if you're lucky, you know, like a movie or a season of TV. Like you don't get to make that much stuff, so like wanting it to be good makes sense, right?
Yeah, it also it frustrates me when a TV show or something is on the air for a while and then like the creator or the main like writer goes off and does something else, and then the show feels phoned in. It's like, dude, I'm watching this.
Yeah.
Another thing I realized from just scaling up to this level of production is there's like so many people on set, and there's extension cords like wrapped around the whole building to a generator that somebody got there at 5 a.m.
Sure.
And says like little elves in the night. And it's like, wow, I need to like do a good job because all these people,
all the way from Ohio to like sit next to this generator.
A lot of responsibility. Yeah. I feel like as if you're creatively in charge of something, like I want to give it 100%. I'd feel terrible if I like didn't try my hardest because everybody else is like showing up
and telling their parents that they worked on this cool show.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's all you care about, Matt, is telling your parents you worked on a cool show.
I mean, like, you know, you want to be able to say like, oh, this is the thing that I have been working on for years and can't talk to you on the phone for, you know, like there's a lot of sacrifices you make to make art like this, you know? So like being able to make sure that everybody is proud of it in a specific way or in any way, you know, the way that they want to express it is important. So
I was going to say one kind of like mantra we had at the start was telling people, everyone we like interviewed and wanted to work with, was like, we want to make something great. Like we want to try really hard. We just started saying like, it's going to be a lot of work. but also people got on board and were kind of like, and it too, because a lot of our crew was from the commercial world and had made a TV show before. This was sort of pitched as like an opportunity to do something fun and narrative and that you'll really like and want to watch again and be proud of. And telling people that really, I think was huge and motivated people to work harder and to take pride and ownership in it. And that was, I think, a key thing that we did that really paid off.
Yeah, especially in such a technical show, you really need a lot of people dialed in. Yeah.
Cool. You also pay them decently, I assume.
I hope so.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I was going to say about the parents, you always want to tell your parents because they're the only ones that like haven't cut the cord yet, so they can actually like turn on the TV and watch what you made. So awesome. Well, so how can we follow you? Like, are you on social media? Do you have any?
Yeah. How can listeners learn more about you?
I've got a website called terribletown.com, and that's also my Twitter handle at terribletown.
Was that a Channel 101 show?
No.
It just sounds like it.
It's not. It is a great name for a Channel 101 show.
Just a moniker I stole from a field recording in an obscure song.
Gotcha.
In college. that I've now used as my brand.
Nice. Cool. And so I guess, yeah, people should check that out. And they can watch Corporate.
Yeah, please watch Corporate.
On Comedy Central.
Wednesdays at 10 p.m.
After this podcast comes out, there will be more episodes to see.
Yeah, and you can watch them online, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Just torrent them on the Pirate Bay.
You can buy them for a reasonable amount of money on iTunes or Amazon.
And I'm sure Hulu. Can you watch them on Hulu?
I think there's a delayed later thing that'll be on Hulu.
Yeah, I would have... Normally, for Comedy Central stuff, I would wait and then watch it all on Hulu. But I was like, well, we're doing this interview, and I like the show so much.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Matt's gone full on corporate.
Oh, dude. I did.
Yeah. Before we finish, we're going to talk about some things that we like.
Unpaid endorsements.
Do you guys have anything?
I do have something. Yeah, I can kick it off.
Okay.
So my wife for Christmas got me the Thing board game. The Thing, Infection on Outpost 31, after John Carpenter's The Thing. You guys know Mondo? It's like that art kind of gallery sort of space that they do like cool posters and like, it's like Gallery 88 basically, but in Austin and I think associated with the Alamo Draft House. Anyway, this is their board
familiar.
Game. So it's real cool looking on top of being a super fun game. And basically... It's like, you know, you're in the outpost and, you know, one player is secretly the thing, the imitation, and you're trying to figure out who that person is. And it's real
is
fun.
Is it like Mafia, kind of?
Kind of like Mafia, but with a little bit more of a board game element. So it's a social deduction game like Mafia, but then you also have team-based sort of missions that you have to carry out as well. So... You'll have to, you know, you draw a card and it's like, uh-oh, there's a fire in the, you know, storeroom or something like that. And so there's an extra layer of gameplay on top of it. It's a little complicated. I would recommend if you are having people over, watch a YouTube tutorial on how to play it beforehand. But it was super fun and like combines like nerdy board gamery with some kind of more social elements as well. It was really great.
Complicated fun with social elements. All right.
That's cool. And what you said, it's social deduction?
Is that yeah, the social deduction is like that category of like mafia or werewolf or like you're trying to figure out if someone's lying or not.
Yeah. I just played Sudoku on my Southwest flight. I was like really trying to not buy the Wi-Fi. And they have like two games you can play on like you're on the network. And I guess that's like a mathematical deduction game, right? It's
oh,
like
yeah,
the same,
that sounds right.
The same thing. It's like, well, it can't be this and it can't be this.
I got pretty deep into Sudoku in high school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah,
I mean, great. Especially when you're trying to kill time.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
It does. It takes like 45 minutes to do one.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's not as fun as reading the news if you can't do that.
Yeah. Pat, you got something?
And this is probably doesn't need any help because it seems like it's pretty ubiquitous throughout Los Angeles, but I have to... Say sure. I'm basically addicted to LaCroix.
Sure.
Sparkling water. I see you have an off-brand sparkling water.
I have the Albertsons brand LaCroix. Yeah.
So I want to, personally to you, sure. ask you to drink LaCroix. It's because what it is, it's nothingness. It's just bubbly, nothing. But what I've realized from sitting in, just working or sitting in an office all day is that I need to consume something and it literally doesn't matter what it is. Mm-hmm. Like I used to drink like 8 cups of coffee a day, but not because I needed caffeine at all, just because I needed to put liquid into my mouth.
And water didn't work. Water's too boring.
Yeah. Water's too boring. I need something exciting.
Just a little something.
But the least amount of
sure.
exciting.
I think that's like what people used to call smoking, right? Like,
yeah.
Like you just smoke to do something.
It is. Right? It's habitual. It breaks up the day.
Yeah. And it's like a stress reliever in a way, right?
I have a friend who is, it's January, so he's doing one of those like trendy, he's doing the Whole 30, which is like a cleanse where you don't eat anything or whatever.
Full disclaimer, Matt's also doing some.
I'm doing cleanse. Both the quantum wellness cleanse and the Whole Life Challenge.
Wow. So, you're going to be amazing pretty soon.
I'm rather proud of myself for never having heard of this.
Yeah, fair enough. But the point is he was like at a party and finally was like, I get LaCroix now. Like, oh, you just.
Everyone has that moment.
You feel awkward and you're like, I'm not drinking beer, but I need to do something with my hands. And he was like, yeah, I drink four one night. I had no idea.
And I stopped drinking Shirley Temples when I discovered LaCroix.
Yeah, I just drink LaCroix and eat Altoids. That's the other thing. That is just like nothingness.
Are you allowed to eat unlimited ones of those?
I don't know. Is that bad?
Does it give you tummy problems?
Well, I was just with someone on this project and he had a cough. And he had a bag of like Hall's cough drops, like 100 of them or something. And during our casting, it was a long casting, like 6 hours or something. He ate like the entire bag almost. And I was like, I'm pretty sure you can only have two of those a day.
Yeah.
Or at least every 4 hours. And he's like, no, I don't think there's a limit. And then he's like, we looked at the bag and it's like, oh yeah, you're going to die.
Also, like,
you'll never cough again.
Even if it was okay to do that, you're still eating like a bag of candy,
yeah.
right? Like those Halls are just like.
But do they have calories? Is it sugar or is it like.
Yeah, it's definitely sweetener. Sugar, right?
Yeah.
Right?
But it
Ricola?
Lasts for a while. That's
yeah, that's
it,
true.
You can
yeah.
do it. But my dad got a kidney stone from eating calcium Tums.
Oh, really?
Habitually. So, yeah.
So that's an unendorsement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. I think my dad probably did the same.
Are you guys afraid of kidney stones as I am?
Yeah. I assume so. Assuming you're afraid. Which is not at all because I'm a man.
Yeah. Like, is there something I should be drinking to prevent them?
Water.
Like acid?
Don't consume any calcium. That's, let your bones be brittle.
I think hydration is a big part of it, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other
LaCroix. There you go.
The last thing I'll say about LaCroix is I do probably think we'll find out it's going to give us cancer.
I think it's supposed to be bad for your teeth, actually, or your bones.
There must be something. It's.
Yeah, there's got to be a catch.
It's like diet soda. It's like, why is it zero calories?
And about 6 months ago, they found out, I think most of America found out that LaCroix was not French. So that's also
pretty. Where is it from?
It's like from Indiana or something crazy like that.
I'm going to believe what I want to believe.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, if you thought it was French, wouldn't you think it was LaCroix?
Yeah. So there was a long debate in our writer's room if it was LaCroix or LaCroix.
It is LaCroix.
It's LaCroix.
Because it rhymes with enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like from LaCroix, Indiana. It's like it might be a French spelling.
There's a French person involved somewhere.
Well, also like St. Croix, right? You don't say St. Croix, do you?
You should, though.
Oh, maybe you should.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's like Versailles, Kentucky. It always makes me laugh. Yeah.
Paris, Texas? Come on. Yeah. It's Paris. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, my endorsement is so I was just on this shoot and we had Bryce Morgan on our podcast last week, and she was talking about how she like loves the handheld monitor, mm-hmm. you know, as a director, and kind of based on what Pat was saying here, like when you have this big crew, you see all these people are working for you, and everyone, like you show up to set at 8 a.m., and there's been someone there since 5 a.m. that's already run cables and everything, and you kind of feel, at least for years, I've kind of been feeling like, well, these people already set things up the way they like to set them up. I don't want to bug them, but I guess my endorsement is to like, even if something is done the same way for many years and this is how each department does it, like, don't be afraid to say, hey, I know that's what you guys are used to doing, but this is what I like to do. So there's two things I did on this last shoot, which I've never done before, but I just like insisted, which one I was like, hey, I want a handheld monitor too. Like, why does only Bryce get that, you know? And it was awesome. I never used it. I just
didn't
like the monitor. I used it a little bit. I like when we were shot in this attic and I was, whenever I was like in a cramped spot or if I was like talking to the client, I would like carry my monitor over and
you
like
can point
show
at
them.
Something.
Yeah.
But I they had, don't like it with two cameras makes a handheld monitor kind of cumbersome because you can get two side by side or you can get one that switches back and forth, but it's not as elegant.
Yeah, but I kind of
single cam. It's nice, you know.
Yeah, it was cool. I enjoyed having it, but I'm always have to like put it down somewhere, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, where's my monitor? But in the bathroom. I just really kind of appreciated that. I said to like the DP, I was like, hey, can I have this handheld monitor? And he asked the producer, and they're like, yeah, sure. Like, like I would have always liked to have one, but I never thought that I should ask for one.
Learning to ask for things.
Yeah. And the other thing is I told the on our this shoot, the video playback guy was the guy that was also setting up Video Village for the client. And he was always setting it up with the clients like facing away from set. Mm-hmm. I think in his mind, it's like if they're talking, we're less likely to hear it or something. But I was like, I just don't ever do that. Like always put the monitor in the, like always have the people sitting. So where they're facing, if they look past the monitor, they would see the set. Mm-hmm. Don't have people facing away from set. It's weird for the actors. It's weird for people that are trying to yell at stuff. And I don't know. It's just like,
it's weird.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not like a big feng shui guy, but it seems like bad feng shui to me.
Also, if you run from set over to them,
they see you.
They see you coming if they're pointed at the set.
Right. If they're pointed at the set, you can wave to them. You can say, like, what'd you guys think? Like, there's a connection that you're like, and I know.
Yeah, you can do thumbs up, question, like head tilt, and they can give thumbs up back.
Right. So my endorsement is like, even if you are not the most experienced person on set, like, feel free to say like, hey, this is what I like, because this is when I shot with just my two friends in my apartment. No, you don't have to be mean about it, but just like kind of trust your instincts, which is, I know, something people talk about all the time, but it's not,
it's fine to
don't
have
be
it.
Afraid to trust your instincts.
It's fine to have a new idea.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so thanks so much for joining us, Pat.
This was great. Guys. Yeah. Thanks for the show. Corporate Wednesdays, Comedy Central.
Yeah, you can find out more about Pat on his social media, Terrible Town, but we'll also put it in our show notes on our website, justshootitpod.com. And you can also email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. We love questions, comments. We also have a Twitter, justshootitpod.
Instagram, Facebook, the whole thing. Leave us an iTunes review. That's a big, big up for us. You guys have been leaving some great ones lately, so thank you. And you can follow me at Mr. Matt Emo.
And me at Smitey Pileg. This episode was edited by Christopher Robert Gray.
And our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And the music was provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar.
Catch you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.